You know, the tabernacle that Moses built in the desert, you know, it could fit in our parking lot. I've seen a life-size version of it, and it fits about the size of the parking lot. Solomon's temple and Ezra and Nehemiah's rebuild of that temple is probably about the size of our Banner outpatient building over there. That's about as big as it is. But starting in a few years BC, King Herod began to expand the temple complex, and it pretty much grew to about 3/4 mile long and 5/8 mile wide, nearly all solid marble, gold and silver, and it gleamed in the sun. It was impressive. It would catch your eye. You come up over the Mount of Olives, and it would hit you, and it would really, really impress you. The disciples thought so. And they're walking with Jesus along the way, and they're pointing out the buildings. They're trying to impress Jesus with this building, as impressed as they are. And Jesus impressed, not so much. Because he drops a bombshell on him. He says, "Do you not see all these things, this entire temple?" He says, "Truly I say to you, not one stone will be left upon another. It will all be torn down." Wait, what? No temple? No presence of God within the land? What happens? What happens to us? What happens to anything? Because the temple is what made the land holy. God's presence is what makes all of it holy. Jerusalem and the land and everyone, everything around it. This really would be the end of the world if this happened. So the disciples reflect on that, and what we fail to see in Matthew 24 is that they ask two questions. He said, he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us when these things will happen." One question. Tell us when these things will happen. "What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" They ask two questions. All of Matthew 24 is answering both those questions. By the way, and we tend to forget that they are two different answers. Why? Because there were two questions that was asked. When? It must be the end if the temple is destroyed. And we know that the end is something to do about your coming. What are the signs? They don't even realize that they're asking two separate questions, because for them, it was one. See, but the thing is that the temple will be destroyed physically, actually. In 70 AD, Titus leads an army and actually walks into the temple, completely defiles it and destroys it, burns it to the ground. And by the way, in 135 AD, Rome will come one more time, and this time, they'll take every Israeli and kick them all out of Palestine. So this thing actually happened. Did the world end in 70 AD? No, it didn't. His coming, the end of the world, is another matter entirely. He may be answering both questions at the same time. Why? It's because the disciples were the ones that put the two events together. But they don't go together in history. They don't go together in prophecy. So the whole chapter, he's answering both questions, and it involves three particular topics. Where? Where's the place? Places like the temple, the land, and then who? Who is involved? And then when? The end of Daniel leaves us kind of in the same place. Us questioning time, questioning people, who, and then also questioning what? Where? What's the whole thing? Times, places, and people. So I'm going to spend the final two studies, if you will, with Daniel. We're in Daniel 13. In the very last a chapter of Daniel, but we'll still spend a lot of time in 11 because they both actually are kind of the same chapter and we don't even kind of realize it. But I wanted to come away with some conclusions with these last two, and they all will have to do with these three main topics: time, when, place, where is all this, and then the people that are involved. And I tried to do just the specific topics, but I found out that they're all thrown together. So it won't be, say, just dealing with time, but today we will deal mostly with time. When? Because the question is asked, the first time that this question is asked is all the way back in chapter 8 when we're talking about the 2300-day prophecy. There's an angel there whose job is only to ask one question, and that is how long? How long? When? What's going on? So we will deal mostly with time today. So last week I proposed that prophecy and history certainly allows for speculation. But if the prophecy has already been made clear about the fulfillment, then I don't think we're allowed to make up whatever we want. And to me, the prophecy was clear because it put us in a particular time in history, as chapter 8 did, as chapter 10 did. So this king of the north, which sounds like a human king or one particular human king or kingdom, this king of the north is actually the little horn power of chapter 10. The little horn power, the beast. It is human, it is, but it isn't one single human. It's not one single kingdom. It's what whatever kingdom has mixed with whatever religious power in order to come up with the Babylonian way of worship. And all chapter 11 is this war going on throughout all the world that this kingdom of the north is wreaking. Because back in chapter 8, it said that this king, this human and religious power come together. This little horn in Revelation says this little horn is actually two beasts. It wreaked havoc, didn't it? It reigned the world for 1,260 years. Remember? 538, 1798. And so to me, chapter 11 is about 30 verses all about this war. And there's so many iterations of it. And what I tried to point out last week is the iterations doesn't matter. Daniel describes it as a human conquest because it is a human power. And this is all about this, it's all about the great controversy, not about some sort of world wars between the remnants of the Greek Empire and Rome and generals and everything like that. No, this is the spiritual great controversy, this king of the north and everybody that he's fighting. 30 verses just to describe it. The whole chapter is 45 verses. It's huge. Chapter 12, on the other hand, sharp contrast. It's half that, not even half that. It's only 13 verses that Daniel will use to conclude. But it picks up and it continues with the history to the present and then actually on to our future. Okay, on to our future. See, because chapter 11 in verse 40, beginning this, it says, at the time of what? At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, but the king of the north shall rush upon him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and with many ships. He shall advance against countries and pass through like a flood. Verses 40 to 45 is a particular era, and the era is labeled for us. It's the time of the what? So it's saying that at the end of this, at the end of this little horn's reign or this king of the north's reign, there will be coming an end, but there is a particular era that it does. It's not an exact date, but it's an era. And verses 40 to 45 tell us what that era is. It's the very last gasps or breath, if you will, of this king enjoying his reign. So what we're left with then is the end. The little horn, the two beasts, 1798, 1844, all history that we've all been shown from the book of Daniel that is true. All of it. But that's all we're left with. Those dates right there, right? Those are the only dates that we actually have. And the very end of it, it said that he will pitch his palatial tents between the sea and the beautiful holy mountain. The holy mountain, by the way, refers to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Yet he shall come to his end with no one to help him. It's about the what? It's about the end. The beast seems to have picked a place, but did he? We'll talk about that next week. But he also gives a time that just before this, he picks this place before he is ended. So there is place and there is time. When is this false God and its false church going to be ended? It's not 1798. It's not 1844. Chapter 12 picks that up and says, at that time, what time? The time that this beast or this little horn or this king of the north comes to his end, Michael, and who is Michael? Jesus, the great prince, the protector of your people, shall what? Shall arise. And there shall be a time of anguish such as never occurred since nations first came into existence. But at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who's found written in the book of life. When is it that everyone who's found in the book of life going to be delivered? At the second coming. Because he says, many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. When is the only time in earth's history that that is going to happen? At the second coming. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Which means that the false church, the king of the north, all of this, it's going to be around as long as we're here. In fact, what is it that brings this false worship, this little horn, these two beasts, the dragon and his reign? What is it that brings it all to an end? The second coming. So chapter 12 actually puts us into a time frame to begin to talk about time. It's the end of earth's history. It's the end of the final reign of these false gods and these churches. The end. Both the disciples' questions are answered right here. Daniel's been asking it for a couple of chapters now. Now God is showing Daniel, this is it. Everything I've told you in history up until right here is what I'm saying. This is when it all ends. See, but this only concerns Daniel in one way and one way alone. And what is that? He says, but you, Daniel, keep the words, what? Secret. And the book, what? Sealed until the time of the what? Until the time of the end. Many shall be running back and forth, and evil shall increase. Secret and sealed. Why? Why does Daniel have to seal his book now and keep it a secret? Because it's for when? It's for the time of the end. And God is telling Daniel, you're not going to be there, man. Because it now goes into Daniel's future. It travels all through our past, 1798, 1844, and beyond. It comes up to our present. And has Jesus come yet? Nope. So it goes where? It goes wherever it's going to go, right? Which means right now we're living in the time of the what? The time of the end. See, this particular phrase in Hebrew is only used five times. In all of Scripture, Daniel is the only one that uses it. The time of the end. He uses it here. He used it in chapter 8, verse 17. He came near to where I was standing. Remember, Gabriel comes near where I was standing, and he was frightened and fell on my face. But he said to me, son of man, understand that the vision pertains to the time of the end. He was just told that that little horn was going to wreak havoc on God's reign on earth. And Daniel was sick. He was frightened. He was afraid about what this little horn was going to do. And Gabriel comforts him by saying, don't worry, man. This vision is for the time when? Of the end. So what was it that happened in chapter 8 that we know? What date can we attach to chapter 8? Chapter 8 ends by saying 2,300 years, and the sanctuary then shall be what? Shall be cleansed. And when did we know that happened? 1844. So he uses the time of the end, but we know it as a 2,300-year period that ends in 1844. So for us, time of the end is when? It's in the past. We saw it happen. The next time that he uses it is in chapter 11, verse 35. Some of those who have insight will fall in order to refine, pure, purge, and make them pure until the end, because it is still to come at the appointed time. Chapter 11, this holy war is going on. This great controversy is going on. And guess what? People are becoming refined. People are being purged. People are making decisions. People are meeting God and making decisions as to whether or not they will give themselves to him and to follow Jesus. Stuff's happening, isn't it? History's happening all the time. The church then has its own history. Gospel's being preached. People are making decisions. All during the time of the what? During the time of the end. At the end, the king of the south will collide with him. The king of the north will storm against him with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships, and they will enter and overflow and pass through. So we know that this is pertaining to the reign that the little horn had, the victory that the king of the north had. And we know that that went for 1,260 years, 538 to 1798. The time of the end and the prophecy for us is still when? It's still in the past. It's been happening ever since then. Then the last two times that he uses it is here, what I just read. But as for you, Daniel, conceal the words, seal up the book until the end of time. Many will go back and forth and knowledge will increase. And he said in verse 9, he said, go your way, Daniel, for these words are concealed up until when? The time of the end. So yes, 1798, 1844, that's all in Daniel's future. For you and me, it's when? It's in the past. Did the end time end in 1844? Nope. Here we are, which means we're living in what? In the end time. This is it. I, Daniel, looked, two others appeared, one standing on his bank of the stream and one on the other. One of them said to the man clothed in linen who was upstream, how long shall it be until the end of these wonders? That high priest figure is back in chapter 12, the one that we last saw in chapter 10, right? We can tell by the way he's dressed. And then the question is then asked, what is the question? How long? It's all about time. How long is this going to go on? How long of this? When is the end of the wonders? And then this man, this high priest, shows up again. He's clothed in linen. He was upstream. He raised his right hand and his left hand toward heaven. And I heard him swear by the one who lives forever that it would be for a time, two times, and half a time. And that when the shattering of the power of the holy people comes to an end, all these things would be accomplished. This high priest figure repeats the time of this king of the north, the little horn, the beast, until everything is accomplished, until the sin of the little horn is completely known and the reign over God's people comes to an end. And when did it come to an end? 1798. Daniel's book contains these prophecies, but Daniel was told to what? To seal them, because he wouldn't be able to understand them because none of the prophecies have been fulfilled yet. God, in essence, is telling him not to worry about it, isn't he? Don't worry about it, man. This is in your future. Because he says it. I heard, but I could not understand. So I said, my Lord, what shall be the outcome of these things? The question was asked, how long? The answer came back, no answer yet. So he says, so what will the outcome be? What is the outcome? And that's when God tells him, go your way, Daniel, for the words are to remain secret and sealed until the time of the end. You don't understand, because it will be in a time that's in your future, but it will be at the time of the end. And again, so far, to repeat it, for how many times I've repeated it? For Daniel, it's in the future. For us, it's when? It's in the past. Why are we able to understand it? because the prophecy began to be fulfilled. As soon as these prophecies began to be fulfilled, we were then able to understand it. Remember, Jesus said, the only way to truly understand when a prophecy is fulfilled is not about predicting when or where or how it will be fulfilled. It's actually looking at history and seeing it already fulfilled. He said, I say these things to you now so that when they happen, you will remember what I said and you'll what? And you'll believe. That's the purpose of prophecy. We're able to put these dates to it. Why? Because they were already fulfilled when the book was opened to us. And the book was opened because these prophecies began to be fulfilled. You don't understand because it'll be the end. And even in verse 10, he repeats himself what he said before. Many shall be what? Many shall be purified, cleansed, and refined. Isn't that great news? In the midst of this great controversy, when the little horn and his power, this perversion of worshiping God, this perversion of worldly power and religious power together, this whole great controversy that's happened between the dragon and the two beasts and the little horn and all of that, that in all of that, there will be many people who will be refined. Isn't that great news? I think it is. None of the wicked understand. Why? It's the wise who understand. It's the wise who listen. People decide for God and people don't. There'll be evil and there'll be wisdom. It always will be. It just will be, which means every generation, God comes along and says, Daniel, go your way. You're living in this time. There are things that you're not going to understand. There are things that you do understand. There are things that you have understood, and now you understand them differently. History is happening right beside you, but guess what? Go your way. You're living in the time that you're living. And we're here, why? Because he put us here. So whatever it is we don't understand, he put us here knowing that we wouldn't understand it. Whatever it is we do understand, he put us here knowing we would understand it. Amen? You ever wish that you lived in another era? I do all the time. And it's stupid. Because if I would have made it in another era, I would be living in that other era, right? But here in this one, I'm still breathing for some reason. And you still allow me to do this for some reason. We're here giving us the best opportunity to hear the good news and to respond. God said, here, go your way, Daniel. Daniel's told the one frustrating thing, though. See, if the end time is future for him, and the end time is past for us, and also what? Also future, right? Again, Jesus didn't come in 1844, did he? He hasn't come yet, has he? So the end time is past for us, it's present for us, and it's what? And it's future. And the one thing that we cannot be, that we can't seem to stand to be told every generation, and I'm not speaking for Daniel. Daniel doesn't seem to be frustrated by it, okay? But we are, because every time that he tells us, yes, you're living in the end time. The end time has been around for a long time before you. You're living in it now, and it may be a long time that you're gonna live in it afterwards. What I want you to do is, yes, Lord, tell me, what is it you want me to do? I want you to wait. I want you to wait. I want you to go your way. No! Give me something to do. And I hope it includes understanding prophecy and predicting. That's what I want to do. I want to tell people that they don't know what I know. The one guy in this whole thing that could have told us can't. And he's told to wait, and he's good with it. He just says, okay, good. Like I pointed out, did you notice that after chapter 10, when it was revealed to him that the high priest had it all under control, right? That Michael, the high priest, has it all under control, everything's good. Daniel, all of a sudden, wasn't sick anymore. All of a sudden, he didn't feel like he was dying anymore. All he needed to know was that the high priest was in control, that the temple still stood somewhere,
And then occasionally, and on one occasion, it was going to again. He was good. And he seems to still be. He's the only one that can hear this. Greg, go your way. Wait. Be patient. Endure. No, we want it now. We want to know who, and we want to know when, and we want to know where. See, we're already given the whens of the two prophecies. Again, we're going to talk about time here. 1798. 1798 is when the Holy Roman Empire finally had its entire reign upon people. And finally, room was given to the woman. Room was given to the church. And it could be opened up. And finally, there was a choice where you didn't have to bow down to an emperor and a king in order to worship God anymore. Didn't last long, by the way, because there's another beast that rises up and does it again, comes across with a new iteration of the Babylonian power. But the one that ended, its complete reign, ended in 1798. We nailed down the longest prophecy, 2,300 days. It ended into 1844. The problem is with chapter 12, there's a couple of more prophecies that we don't know, that we didn't. It says in verse 11, from the time the regular burnt offering is taken away, the abomination that desolates is set up, there will be 1,290 days. We just figured out 2,300. We just figured out 1,260. And now at the very end, you're going to throw in another one on us? I tell you who that makes happy, though. Who it makes happier, the ones that are still trying to figure out all the king of the north, south, east, west battles, emperors, generals, because they're saying, hey, there's one we can figure out. Happier those who persevere and attain to the what? To the 1,335 days. Brand new, two numbers thrown in at the very end. Ooh, look, new numbers, more fun. 1290, 1335. I don't know if I could do this without butchering it, all right? But I'm going to disappoint you. They aren't new. Neither one of them are. And they've already been fulfilled because 1798 and 2300 days in 1844 was fulfilled. Both of those are already fulfilled too. Nothing new. No new charts. You can't try to figure out who's what, where, and when because it's already done. See, to me, it makes sense. You wouldn't throw it in one verse before the chapter ends, throw in a brand new prophecy, would you? Look how long it took for him to explain all the other prophecies. So what's this setup of the abomination that desolates? Well, our prophetic knowledge and conclusions did this for us. We know that 1844 is the end of the heavenly sanctuary prophecy, right? Daniel 8:14. He answered him for 2,300 evenings and mornings. Then the sanctuary shall be made restored to its rightful state. We know we're talking about the sanctuary where? The sanctuary in heaven. 2,300 years, it's fulfilled when? 1844. Now jump ahead to Daniel 12:12. This is what it looked like in heaven, right? It's the sanctuary in heaven. It's a 2,300 year process. Daniel says, though, the people on earth at that time, they went through 1,335 years. Happy are those who persevere and attain to the 1,355 days. These are the people on earth at the same time that the one in heaven was happening. You with me? So the persevering people on earth, they last 1,335 years, question mark, because we don't know when that started and we don't know when it ends. All we know is that 1844 definitely was the fulfillment of the 2,300 year prophecy. So if we subtracted it, guess what number we come up with? We come up with 508. Actually, you come up with 509. That's why you can't do prophecy on a calculator. Remember, you do prophecy on a number line, not on a calculator, because a calculator doesn't have a zero year. You with me? You can't count the year that you're in. Math doesn't allow you to do that. Because if the first time that you ever did the 2,300 year prophecy on a calculator, you come up with 1843, not 1844. You understand? Do you ever have anybody pull out a calculator while you're doing the Bible study? Say, no, we can't do it on that. right? If you can make a number line real quick, I'll show you. But 508, what's 508? Well, go back to chapter 7. Remember when we learned when this little horn would have his reign and his power? It was in 538. But that 538, when Justinian got rid of those two Arian powers, it didn't start in 538. It actually started with Clovis, king of the Franks, back in 508. When he was baptized and converted, he went after the Visigoths first, and he got rid of them. Then Justinian comes along, the governor of the Eastern Roman Empire. He's the one that gets rid of the Vandals and the Ostrogoths. And the prophecy said, when those three horns go, the little horn comes up in its place. What is it? 508. How about that? So the 1335-year prophecy has its fulfillment completely in the 2300 years. 1260. 1260 plus 508 is 1335. You with me? So that's where we're at. The little horn rules 1260 from 538 to 1798. If you take 508, which was what we were, add 1290, you come up with 1798. So even the 1,290-year prophecy is all contained in the 1798 prophecy, as is the 1,335 years within the 2,300 years. There's no new charts to make. They're all the same. Nothing new to speculate, nothing else to try to tell somebody that we know something that they don't. The end time people only get to what? Wait. That's it. And it says that this is preceded by this power, this time of anguish, this time of trouble. We talk about the time of trouble. When will it start? What is it? Why do we want to know when the time of trouble is actually starting? Well, I only know this. The prophecy only tells us this about the time of trouble. At that time, Michael the great prince, the protector of your people, shall arise. There shall be a time of anguish such as never occurred since nations first came into existence. That's all we know. Is that it is such a trouble that nothing like it before is to be compared to it. That's the only thing we know about the time of trouble. By the way, could you apply that to the second coming? In the minutes and the moments that the second coming occur, what is it that happens to the people who are going to be lost? A horrible anguish overtakes them. They're calling for the mountains to fall on them. For them, it's a time of trouble like they've never, ever seen, right? So it could apply to that, couldn't it? It could almost apply actually to the time. But anguish, never before and never again. Jesus says this himself when he's answering the disciples back in Matthew 24. For then there will be great tribulation such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now or ever will. He's actually applying it to 70 AD. He's applying it to the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. He says, and he applies it to that, and he even applies the abomination of desolation to the temple destruction of 70 AD. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. There's a holy place. We'll talk about place next week. He actually mentions a place. Jerusalem and Judea, they were actual places. But the time is this siege. The siege of Jerusalem was horrific. Josephus, the historian, described it. The siege of Jerusalem lasted so long that every time that somebody jumped over the wall to pull up some dandelions or something to eat, they would be crucified. The Kidron Valley was nothing but cross after cross after cross. Josephus said you could not walk through the Kidron Valley like this without hitting crosses. So many people out there crucified, so many corpses out there rotting, that when Titus came to claim victory, when the general came up over the hill, over the Mount of Olives to claim victory, when he saw it, they said that he lost his lunch. He became sick to his stomach. This is a Roman general.
And Josephus said that the prophecies of the Old Testament sieges were all true too. They had nothing to eat. They had nothing to drink. They were eating. They were being cannibals. They were doing all of this. It was absolutely horrific, which is why Jesus said, when you see this sign, you guys, you got to go. Don't even go back to your house to get your coat. You got to go. What do you think if the prophets could see the horrors of war today? Would it look any different to them? I don't think it would. Remember our vision and the man clothed in linen, if we want to talk about time now. I looked up and saw a man clothed in linen. This was back in chapter 10, remember? And he had a belt of gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like beryl, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze. The sound of his words were like the roar of a multitude. He shows up here. Daniel has to seal the book with this vision in it. But remember the message that this one had. The message this high priest had was this 2,300 years that this little horn, these two beasts will be in power, it won't last forever. It's going to end. That was the message, that the daily sacrifice would be set back up. Everything in the heavenly sanctuary would be set right. That was the whole message. But look who shows up in Revelation 10. Verse 1, he says, I saw another strong angel coming down out of heaven, clothed with a cloud, which means he's clothed in what? He's clothed in white. The rainbow was upon his head. His face was like the sun, and his feet were like the pillars of fire. That sounds like our guy from Daniel, doesn't it? Feet like burnished bronze, glowing in a furnace. His face was on fire. Remember, eyes of lightning, faces of fire, clothed in white. It sounds like him, doesn't it? Sounds even more like him when he does what he does. He had in his hand a little book which was opened. He put his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land. The same with the angel or the high priest or whoever that happened to be back in chapter 10, remember? He stood on top of the river. He stood on top of the water of the river, over the land and over the water. This guy's described standing on the water and on the land at the same time. By the way, kind of saying, you know what? That beast that you're gonna see in three chapters in Revelation 13, the one that comes out of the sea, the one that comes out of the land, I'm over both of them. But this one's holding what? He's holding a little book. See, back in Daniel, that vision was sealed. This book is in this guy's hand, and it's what? It's open. It's not sealed. So he's claiming that he knows what's happening. He's kind of giving us a hint that maybe Daniel is getting ready to be unsealed. It's a book not sealed, but it's opened. This is him. And he cries out with a loud voice as when a lion roars. And when he had cried out, the seven peals of thunder uttered their voices. What was it that he yelled? Did anybody here know what he yelled? Trick question. Nobody knows what he yelled. Because seven peals of thunder had spoken. I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying, seal up the things which the seven peals of thunder have spoken, and do not write them. John, go your way. You don't need to hear this. And apparently no one else needs to hear it either. Thunders, there are things that we don't know. There are things that we do know. But here we are in the time that no matter what we know and what we don't, we're here. We're still in the end time. Especially when it comes to time, what we know about time and when and how long. The angel who standing on the sea and lifted up his right hand to heaven swore by him who lives forever, who created heaven and the things in it and the earth and the things in it and the sea and the things in it. He says this one thing. He says, there will be delay no longer. Everything that happened in the book of Daniel, he lets it go. He unseals it. It's all for us now. What we know, we know. What's interesting though, is that it doesn't actually say delay, it actually says time. There will be time no more. No delay.
Why no delay? Because there aren't any other prophecies to be fulfilled, is what he's saying. See, in Daniel, he had to seal it up because all the prophecies weren't what? They weren't fulfilled. Now they're all fulfilled, is what he's saying. There will be no more delay. You guys don't have to wait anymore on prophecy. It's done. The 2300-day prophecy was the last time prophecy in the Bible, and according to Revelation, there isn't one anymore. We're not waiting for anything. You with me? So when he says to us now, go your way, it has to do maybe with when, maybe with how long, but we're not waiting for a prophecy. That's what it means to live in the end time. It's all fulfilled. 1260, 1290, 1335, 2300, 1844, 1798, 508, 538, 457 BC. That's all when. You guys, he said, if you think that you're waiting on another prophecy to be fulfilled, no. There will be delay no longer. That's his message. And he's holding the book of Daniel, and it's what? It's opened. Jesus says it also about living in this end time, back in Matthew 24. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, the powers of the heavens will be shaken. I know that we attribute a meteor shower and a dark day back in the 1800s, the late 1700s and the early 1800s, but how many of those showers have occurred since then? How many of those showers occurred before? How many dark days occurred before? Jesus said the tribulation of those days, it already happened in his day. The sign of the Son of Man appear in the sky, then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky of power of great glory. We're not waiting for a prophecy to be fulfilled, and we're not waiting for some cosmological sign in the sky. The next sign in the sky will be actually him. There is time no more. There are no more signs. So really, truly, I have to tell you today the one thing you don't want to hear. You know what we get to do in the end time? Wait. And we don't put our focus in the sky. And then we don't put our focus into numbers in an ancient book. We look around us and see the horror of living on this planet. And we begin to do something about it. We show people that we can love as we have been loved. We give people the one thing that nothing else can give them. And you say, wow, great. You know, there's so many things that need it. We need to stop wars. We need to do this. No, wars are always going to be with us. Things are always going to be with us. What we're called to do is to be Jesus on this planet, even in the end time. We do not bury our nose into ancient prophecies already fulfilled. And we don't look to the skies for some sort of sign of when the second coming will be, because we know everything, absolutely everything about the second coming except one thing, and what is it? When. Jesus didn't give us a date. He gave us an era that we call what? The last days. And we look back at the last 5 years and we keep using this word unprecedented. I got so tired of hearing the word unprecedented that one day during the pandemic when we were shut down, I began to look back. I said, was there a time in our planet when there was a great plague, you know, on the planet and there was a pretty long war going on and there was horrible racial strife? I only had to go back to 1968. Unprecedented? No. Nothing's unprecedented, is it? I can't tell you how many people ran up to me during the pandemic and saying, are we in the time of trouble? Is this the end time? Finally, I just finally answered, what if we are? What now? What? It was like we're waiting for something to do. What are we supposed to do in the time of trouble? What are we supposed to do in the end time? We've been living in the end time since I don't know when. And we will continue to live in the end time when. Why is it we're always looking for something else? What is it that we're looking for? What do we want to do? When all we were simply asked to do was what? Wait. Endure. Persevere. Here we are. We act on only what we know. If you're reading along next time you're in Revelation and you're in the seven seals, you get to the sixth seal. Look at this. Revelation 6:12, I looked when he broke the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake and the sun became black as sackcloth and made of hair and the whole moon became like blood. Cosmological sign. Are they any different than what we were told in Matthew 24? No. The stars of the sky fell to the earth as a fig tree casts its unripe figs, shaken by a great wind. The first time that an Adventist pastor ever took me through a Revelation seminar, he said, right there under verse 13, take your red pen and draw it right there. There's where you are. Here's where we live. We're in the time after the sixth seal. I hear people saying they're waiting for the seals to be opened. They've been opened ever since Jesus went back to heaven. We're in the sixth seal. The seventh one is the only one to be remained open. And guess what it is? The sky split apart like a scroll when it is rolled up and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. The only time that that is going to happen is during the second coming. The sixth seal has been opened. The sixth trumpet has been sounded. The sixth bowl has been poured. This is where we live. There's nothing more to look for. Jesus, back in 70 AD, says, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Was it too far out of the realm to understand that people that were listening to him right there would still be alive 25 years later when the Romans come to sack the temple? Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. By the way, that's what we do here to wait. You and I make sure that his words do not pass away. You and I make sure that we just don't proclaim those words. We incarnate those words, and we live that love as well as preach that love. That's what we do. And that's why it doesn't pass away. But of that day and hour, no one what? No one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone. He's saying, you want a date for me? I don't even have the date. And I'm the one coming back. So it isn't bad that when he says, Daniel, go your way. Greg, go your way. Gail, go your way. It isn't too bad to be able to tell somebody, you know what? There are things I don't know. And it's okay. I don't know why we're so tempted to prove that we know more about prophecy than anybody else, or that we know more about the Bible than anybody else. There was supposed to be a humility to the apocalyptic people, because apocalypse in and of itself means that there are things that we do not know. There are things that he seals up. They may be waiting for us someday. The seven thunders may be translated for us and told us word for word when we get to the kingdom. Or maybe it'll happen next week. I do not know. But I'm not going to pretend to speculate that I know what the seven thunders said. There's a lot of people out there who will tell you what the seven thunders said. Oh, where'd you get this information? We're honest about what we don't know. There's a humility about us. Those who run to and fro, Jesus says, no, his disciples will be doing what he did. When I come, my disciples will be found on the earth doing what I did. And listen to what he says, the way he puts it. There'll be two men in the field. One will be taken, one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken, one will be left. The end people are still side by side with everybody else. They're still working. They're still establishing relationships. They still have family. They still have neighbors. And where are they? They're not in a bunker somewhere. They're not in the hill country somewhere. They're not running from anybody. They're right there. Because the only way that people can be saved is if we're present. We're not looking for a time to separate. Why? Because we got waiting to do. We got a job to do. Sometimes I think that we're waiting for the starting gun. Time of trouble started, so where are we supposed to, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to get out of here. I think sometimes we're looking forward to it because we really want to get away from people. We want to get away from sinners. Jesus said the second coming, the end time people, where will they be? They'll be right by the sides of those who are going to be lost. Right there. Up to the minute of the second coming. We'll be going on with our life, with our careers, with our jobs, with our families. Daniel, go your way. Daniel still had a job to do. He was second in command in the kingdom. He still had a job to do. Daniel, go your way. You live at this time. What's going to happen is going to happen. And believe me, it will happen. But you got waiting to do. And he said, they'll deliver you into tribulation. They will kill you. You'll be hated by all nations because of what? Because of me. Hated by everybody. See, we all know that as believers, that when we're arrested and tried and convicted, Ellen White said that it'll be a great witness, that there will be more people that will come into the gathering, come into the church, than any other time when we begin to be hated and persecuted and everything else. Simply arrested because of Jesus' name. Because people will be moved by the love and the devotion that martyrdom requires, yes, but they also be moved because they were your friend. They know you. They were our neighbors. People don't care about martyrs unless they knew them. Do you ever notice that no one cares when the cultists suffer? You really don't care when somebody in a cult either suffers, gets arrested, or maybe even gets killed. What do? Well, they deserved it. They were cultists. They followed that cult. But wait. Sam's my neighbor. I love Sam. And this is happening to him? See, because Jesus said the very last sign that we would look at here is because the increase of lawlessness, the love of many will grow cold, the apathy that comes about, the things that we will allow to happen because we simply cannot be bothered to love anymore. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. The good news of the kingdom will be proclaimed. Going to the end, proclaiming it side by side with our friends and our family and our neighbors and our coworkers. Not looking for a starting gun to get away from them. When the world sees love, not the knowledge or a sealed prophecy that we've claimed to unseal, but when it sees the love of Jesus, that is the good news proclaimed to the kingdom. And living in this end time, he says, don't be fooled. If I don't cut this short, how many will be saved? No one will be saved. So we can be assured one thing, that it isn't going to go any longer than it has to. And then when he does cut it short, it'll be because we were on the verge of not being saved. And there's nothing we can do about it. I'm not going to be in the kingdom because we recognize the signs of the times. Not going to be in the kingdom because we said we received the proper seal and we know what the seal is. We're not going to be in the kingdom because we unlocked prophecies that no one else could unlock. We're going to be in the kingdom only because he cut these days short in his mercy, in his grace. Without him, how many would be saved? No one. Time belongs to him, right? And he says, I'll come when the Father sends me, but right now, Marion, go your way. Brenda, go your way. I need you guys to wait, to be patient, to persevere, to endure. Just keep loving people as I have loved you, and you're proclaiming the gospel everywhere. And that's how Daniel ends. But for you, Daniel, you what?
rest. You shall rise for your reward at the end of days. We wait, but guess what? We get to wait together. He gave us the church just for the waiting. So, time. There are conclusions that Daniel has us come to about time. And there are things that we know and that we don't know, but yet here we are. We don't have to wait for another delay. It's here. This is it. What we got. And I think it's pretty good for right this moment, right now, all of us in the same room at least, for this little while. And no, I won't keep you much longer. You know, not bad. We get to rest. But whatever happens, we get to wait and we get to wait together. So we'll tackle place and people next week. Because place is hard too. It's as hard as time to come to conclusions. But thank you. Thank you for your wait. May we be more patient and may we endure more, better, and keep going.